Aina Nealana joins us now from the RTE studios in Cork. How are you, Aina?
I'm grand, not a bother on me. I'm not here long enough to get a Cork accent. I just came down.
Aina, how long have you been in Dublin? Living, I mean.
I've been living in Dublin for 50 years.
And your accent hasn't changed.
No, no, why would it have?
Come on, the feckins.
I have a decent good loud accent. Why would I want to be changing it to something else?
Richard Collins is in Malahide. Richard, you're from Limerick, but it's kind of hard to tell where you're from.
I am, indeed.
Many people have asked me where you're from, and I say Malahide. They say he doesn't sound like he's from Malahide.
I'm from Limerick. Now, Limerick accent is like the Cork accent, but it sort of starts in a high note and goes down to a low one, with a slight curl in the end. I have that accent still, a trace of it anyway. The trouble with living in Dublin is that you get into standard RTE English, you know, and your accent kind of disappears over time. It's happening everywhere.
It is indeed. Anyway, we mentioned the National Botanic Gardens being our sponsor for Eye on Nature, and we're going to talk to Dr. Matthew Jebb in just a moment. He's on Lamb Bay as we speak because thousands of botanists from the Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland spent the last 20 years, would you believe, collecting data on changes in the British and Irish flora. The new plant atlas could be the most powerful statement ever produced on the state of our wild and naturalised plants and reveals devastating loss of Irish plants. Now, this is something you were speaking about on the programme last week, Aina.
That's right, indeed. This atlas is the culmination of 20 years of fieldwork, and it is a devastating snapshot of all the different plants in Ireland, the native ones, the Johnny-come-latelys, and the ones that have been here for a while, and how they have been changing with land use change. And land use change has been so much carried out in the last 30, 40 years, reducing the amount of habitats available for wildlife, standardising everything. And we've known that this is happening from other groups of animals and birds, but it's very much stark from this atlas. 56% decline in Irish plant species. This is unbelievable, and it's happened over 20 years. So the evidence is there. If you can measure it, then you can do something about it. And by gum, does this atlas measure it?
And you said we've got to do something about it by promoting it. So let's talk now to Dr. Matthew Jebb. He's on Lamb Bay right now. Matthew, has the plant life on Lamb Bay suffered just as it has on the mainland?
Absolutely. And it is, you know, it's a place that also has suffered a decline in its flora over the last century or so. And it's a common theme. What the atlas shows us, really for the clearest time ever, the empirical evidence of what is wrong with the flora, what is happening to our native flora. And as Aina was saying, it is the work of 2,500 botanists. And the important thing to remember, this is not funded, people are not funded to go out and do this work by and large. They are doing it on a voluntary basis. They've done it at weekends, and it's been a great tradition for botanists to do this survey work and contributing to a valuable piece of evidence about where species are to be found, their distribution. That's why we call it an atlas. And it is freely available online so that anybody can log into the BSBI website and look at the atlas information. And the maps on it give you incredible clarity about the disappearance of things, the appearance of species, where they have stayed in the last 100 years or so, because the very first atlas was published in 1962. And the fascinating thing about that volume, Derek, is that in 1962, the word conservation is not mentioned once in the entire atlas, because in 1962, it was innocent times that we thought these plants, these animals, biodiversity in general would be with us forever.
And ever.
And we have learnt now, and in the year 2000, a revision of that atlas was done, and we could chart the decline of things. And now we have this 2020 atlas, which is based upon 20 years of fresh field work, looking at all of the native species across Ireland of plants. And we can see for a fact that 56% of the species in our native flora have declined, some of them dramatically.
Yeah, it's a very salutary tale, all right, because not only are we looking at the disappearance and reappearance of plants, but these indicate, of course, the habitats where these plants live. And if the plants are not there, it's because of a deterioration in the quality of the habitats too. So not only have we information about plants, but we know the plant habitats have been deteriorating, and therefore it goes to without saying that other biodiversity, such as insects and birds and things like that, will have deteriorated as well. But it's interesting, Matthew, because the plants have been sort of divided up into three large groups. So there's the native species, the ones with the card-carrying ones, who are here since the Ice Age. They came by themselves without human intervention. And then we have what we call the neophytes, and they're very much the Johnny-come-latelys, and many of those have become invasive species. And then we have a collection of poor unfortunates, you'd be sorry for them. They're called the archaeophytes. And these are plants that arrived here before 1500. Now, I mean, how long do you have to live in a place before you're a native? I mean, they're here 500 years and they're still considered to be runners in, but they're not as bad as the neophytes, because the archaeophytes, as they're called, have settled in and reached climatic vegetation, and they're not upsetting the native fauna. It's the neophytes that are the baddies, a lot of them, and they're the ones that this atlas is showing are actually increasing. So increasing increase is not good, because some things like rhododendron and Japanese knotweed, for example, are increasing at the expense of other more native, more settled plants than them.
Yes, and these archaeophytes that you mentioned, there's about 100 species here that arrived before 1500. And 1500 is picked for a very deliberate reason. It's the moment, I suppose, that Europe discovers there is a huge new world out there in the Americas, but also suddenly, you know, sailing ships are moving all over the globe and moving plants and goods and animals to and fro. So in 1500, we suddenly get Chinese and American plants coming into our landscape, and a lot of them prosper very well because suddenly they're away from their natural predators, their diseases, so they do extremely well. They live a happy life here, a life of Riley. But the other intriguing thing about the archaeophytes is, of course, they came with our earliest agricultural experiments and changes to the landscape of Ireland. So essentially the Iron Age, Bronze Age agriculture appeared from, we moved from being hunter-gatherers to people who were settled, farmed the land and grew crops. And so even a common plant like a poppy, you know, this is a plant from Palestine. It grows in the dry, semi-desert landscapes of not only Arabia and Palestine, but all the way across northern Africa. And it came in sacks of grains as a weed, along with corn cockle and other weeds of our crops, early crops. So these archaeophytes are quite polite. They stay where they drop, so to speak. They stay in fields on the edges of laneways and roads. The neophytes, on the other hand, some of them, as you mentioned, the rhododendron ponticum, Japanese knotweed, the Himalayan balsam, they are ferocious. They seem to have no bounds to their bad behavior. And even something as dramatic as a gunnera plant, the giant rhubarb, Achill Island and now Clare Island, you know, have fallen under the sway of this huge, bossy, invasive plant. And that is one of many pressures now on our native flora. The other big one, of course, which you touched on there, is the grasslands. It's the flower-rich meadows that our grandparents used to take for granted, these amazing swards full of flowers and humming with bees and butterflies and so on. Those have disappeared because of the pressures of agriculture. And that's not to say that farmers are at fault here. The whole system is driven by a desire for cheap food. And, you know, agriculture, in order to earn a living from the land, these farmers are simply following the rule book of what grants are available. And sadly, this has led to huge monotypic stands of rye grass and so forth, which have displaced these flower-rich meadows.
And also, Matthew, agriculture has had an impact on the plants, you know, fresh waterways, because a lot of extra nutrients coming off the land put there to grow these grasses you've mentioned have enriched our waterways, with the result that various pond weeds have increased enormously at the expense of more natural plants that wouldn't have taken up so much space and light in those waterways.
Yes, and one of the important things that we now sort of can do is say to ourselves, right, how are we going to preserve what is left? So whilst the pressure of pollution of waterways with too much nitrogen and so on is, like you say, shading out these natural stands of aquatic plants, we have an opportunity now to bring into cultivation some of these rarest plants. And the National Botanic Gardens and Trinity College Dublin have got together in that both of us are developing seed banks. But as well as a seed bank, as well as collecting seed and drying it and freezing it, we are also trying to grow some of the most critically endangered plants so that we can act like a Noah's Ark for our flora. And now with this atlas, we can pinpoint, you know, what are these rarest plants? Which ones do we now need to move with a certain urgency to get them into cultivation, to get them into seed banks and protect them? Because we know that 15 species of flowering plants have become extinct in Ireland over the last few hundred years. And yet there is good news always. Sea stock, a plant that was missing since 1933 in Ireland, reappeared just 3 years ago in the sand dunes of County Wexford. So the return of the sea stock is, you know, a happy story that some of these plants will recolonize from possibly populations in Wales or northern France that it came from. But it's just one of many plants that are threatened, and we need to move now that we have all of this evidence in front of us. And one of the great things about the Atlas is it does have conclusions of what we need to do now.
Yes, indeed. And designating areas where things are extremely rare, is that going to do any good? I mean, we have a list of flowers on the actual Wildlife Act as an addendum or as an appendix, of them listed out, ones that are protected under the Wildlife Act. I mean, does writing their names down and giving them protection on paper actually work? Or is that just ticking the boxes? I mean, we're a great country for making rules and legislation. But, you know, can it be put into practice?
I think one of the great lessons in the recent past has been the wonderful Burren Life Project. You know, in County Clare, a project to reward landowners who grazed according to principles of, what would benefit the grasslands, where they fed their animals and where they overwintered them and so forth, has had huge results already. And the number of cattle herd owners in County Clare who want to sign up to it is almost universal, because they do appreciate the landscapes they manage. No farmer wants to live in a desert, a monotony of plants. They all love their outdoor life. And to encourage farmers to reward them appropriately, as has been done in the Burren, was a very, very beneficial experiment in how actually moving subsidies from destructive practice into biodiversity positive actions will work. It's a very simple process in a way.
Yeah, if we want the plants, we have to be prepared to compensate, to reward the owners rather than compensate them for farming in a way that is not as highly productive, but at the same time leaves the landscape where it is. So this is a wonderful work of information, of informing people. Here is the picture, 56% decline. I mean, do we want to live in a country where there's 10 plants and that's it? If we don't, it's still not too late. And if we reward the farmers who behave in this way and the landowners, we're still able to save the situation. Because I wouldn't like to be around in the next 20 years when we have the 2050 Atlas or the 2045 Atlas if we continue the way we're going at the moment.
So, I mean, the lesson is, this is a fantastic resource that Anybody can go and search for Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland online and then put in Atlas 2020. And they will find that they have got free access to viewing all of this incredible information, detailed little maps of where a species has been found in the past, where it is today, where the declines have happened, where new discoveries have been made. And it's a very dynamic thing. And the Atlas has also got images. So there's a lot of images of the plants as well. So it's a real learning website for getting an enthusiasm, if you like, for
and of course,
the work.
And people can join the Botanical Society as well and go on field trips with people who are already members and bone up on the flora. People find it more difficult to learn plants than they do maybe to learn birds or other creatures, other groups. We have 950 or thereabouts native plants, so it's a lot to learn. But, I mean, anybody can join the Botanical Society and go off and learn plants for themselves.
Absolutely. And it is a very enthusiastic group of people. You know, I've been out with many of these groups. So although I've only contributed a few hundred records in a way to this Atlas, you know, others have contributed not only thousands of records, but they have passed on the baton to the next generation. They have taught other people. So, you know, anyone from the age of 8 to 80 can partake in these incredible field trips. And joining the BSBI is, you know, a wonderful opportunity for any naturalist to learn the basics of how to identify plants. And it gives you enormous confidence of going out into the fields on your own and being able to say what that plant is. And it's eye-opening. It opens a whole new world to anybody.
I was on Lambay Island, or Lambay, in 1973 looking for sea lavender, rock sea lavender, and I got permission from Rupert Baring, and it was supposed to be on the cliffs at the back of the island where the puffins nested. But by that stage, the place was overrun by gulls and I never managed to find the rock sea lavender. So if you're feeling a little bit now with some time on your hands there, Matthew, nip over and see, can you find either rock sea lavender, or indeed, it's a bit early for the puffins, but see, is the rock sea lavender back? It's a very scarce lavender. Yeah,
I can tell you it is. It's on the south coast, and for many years I never saw it here, and then it's undergone a real resurgence. And one of the fascinating things on an island is sometimes you'll get quite a rare plant on the mainland, and here on a smaller island there are fewer plants around, and it's got the opportunity to form big populations. So there's a number of rare or scarce plants that are actually super abundant on Lambay, and it is a real pleasure to see that the different habitat here encourages them. And that is again a lesson that Ireland is a mosaic. It's a mosaic of farmlands, of grasslands, of woodlands, of wetlands, each with their own little characteristic bits of flora. So things are hiding in our landscape, and we need more people to go out there and see what's there in order that we can protect it and look after it for the future generations.